Tonight, President Biden reaffirming America's commitment to its allies. Days ahead of his high-stakes summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin, the president arriving in Brussels late today, where he will meet with NATO members after declaring America is back at the table. The president wrapping up the G7 summit, ending the first leg of his trip at Windsor Castle, and a sit-down with Queen Elizabeth. Biden's focus is now shifting to that one-on-one with Putin, saying he agrees with Russia's leader on one thing, that the relationship between the two countries is at a low point. The first federal ruling on vaccine mandates, a Texas judge siding with a hospital allowing them to require employees to get vaccinated. The U.S. now working to get 70% of adults at least one dose by the 4th of July, but many families still feeling the virus's devastating toll as the country inches towards 600,000 Americans killed by COVID-19. The record-breaking heat, 43 million Americans on alert as a dangerous heat wave takes aim at the West. Rob Marciano standing by. The major headline overseas, Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving leader, now out as prime minister after the country's parliament narrowly voted in favor of the coalition government. Chaos breaking out inside the Knesset ahead of the vote. The new leadership now in place. The murder mystery tonight after a double homicide involving the mother and son of a prominent South Carolina family. And the life-changing Zoom call, how one woman noticed she was having a stroke when she saw herself on camera. Her message tonight to us all.
From ABC News World Headquarters in New York, this is World News Tonight.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us on this Sunday. I'm Lindsay Davis. We begin tonight with President Biden moving on to the next leg of his European trip. The focus tonight is shifting from the unity and camaraderie of the G7 to that high-stakes summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. President Biden arriving tonight in Brussels, where he'll meet with NATO leaders. Before leaving the UK, the first couple paid a visit to Queen Elizabeth at Windsor Castle. The president reviewing the honor guard. The Bidens then attending a private tea with the Queen. He is the 13th president to meet with the 95-year-old monarch. Earlier at a press conference, the president called the G7 meetings extraordinary, collaborative, and productive. He also shared his view on U.S.-Russia relations ahead of his face-to-face meeting with Putin, now just days away. ABC's Rachel Scott is traveling with the president and leads us off from Brussels.
Tonight, just days away from that high-stakes Geneva summit, President Biden says he agrees with Russian President Vladimir Putin on one thing. U.S.-Russia relations are at a low point.
Let me make it clear. I think he's right. It's a low point.
The president preparing to come face-to-face with the man he once said had no soul, planning to deliver a firm message on everything from cyber attacks to human rights.
We're not looking for conflict. We are looking to resolve those actions which we think are inconsistent with international norms.
But unlike his predecessor, who refused to publicly confront Putin on election meddling in 2018,
I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
Biden will not hold a joint press conference with the Russian leader.
I know you don't doubt that I'll be very straightforward with him about our concerns. And I will make clear my view of how that meeting turned out, and he'll make clear how, from his perspective, how it turned out. But I don't want to get into being diverted by did they shake hands, how far did they talk, who talked the most, and the rest.
During the three-day G7 summit, the president never once mentioning Trump by name, but making it clear his America First policies are over.
The lack of participation in the past and full engagement was noticed significantly, not only by the leaders of those countries, but by the people in the G7 countries. And America's back.
Today, G7 leaders presenting a united front on global issues ranging from climate change to the pandemic. But their plans to counter China's growing influence brushed off by the Chinese embassy, saying the days when global decisions were dictated by a small group of countries are long gone. And tonight, President Biden landing in Brussels to meet with NATO leaders.
Yes.
Before leaving the UK, surprising locals at a mass. Then Marine One touching down at Windsor Castle, the Queen welcoming the Bidens with royal fanfare. The president in his signature aviators, reviewing the guard before a private tea with Her Majesty. The Queen has now met 13 U.S. presidents, dating back to Harry Truman. The president describing the queen as extremely gracious, inviting her to the White House.
She reminded me of my mother.
In terms of the look of her and the, you know, just the generosity.
Reminded him of his mother. Rachel Scott is traveling with the president tonight in Brussels for the NATO summit. And Rachel, the president was asked what's on the table for his talks with Putin. What did he have to say?
Well, Lindsay, the Russian president is already trying to publicly negotiate a deal, saying that he'd be willing to hand over cyber criminals if the United States did the same. The president tonight saying that that is a good sign of progress, but the White House making it clear that it is not an option. This is a high-stakes meeting, but Lindsay, the White House has low expectations. Lindsay?
Rachel, our thanks to you, and David Muir will lead our team coverage of President Biden's face-to-face meeting with Vladimir Putin from Geneva next Wednesday. Our coverage throughout the day on ABC News. Now to the pandemic, and in the first ruling of its kind, a federal judge in Houston dismissing a lawsuit by a group of hospital employees who were fighting their employer's vaccine mandate. That as the U.S. is approaching another grim milestone. Here's ABC's Trevor Ault.
Tonight, the first federal ruling on vaccine mandates. A Texas judge dismissing a lawsuit from a small percentage of employees with the Houston Methodist Hospital System who were resisting the company's mandatory vaccine policy.
We have a sacred obligation to keep our patients safe. Every hospital on the planet should be doing this.
The employee's attorney saying in a statement, this is just one battle in a larger war to protect the rights of employees, and we will be appealing. Tomorrow marks 6 months since the first shot, and the U.S. is now on track to get 67% of adults at least one dose by the 4th of July, missing the president's goal of 70% if the pace doesn't pick up.
Well, I still think we need to vaccinate another 80 to 100 million people to get to the kind of levels of population immunity.
In amplifying the threat to those who hesitate, the growing presence of the highly transmissible Delta variant.
The Delta variant is by far the most contagious variant of this virus we have seen in the entire pandemic. If you've been fully vaccinated, you remain protected.
And tonight, the nation on the precipice of 600,000 Americans killed by COVID-19. Michelle Preisler lost her husband, Daryl, last month.
No, it's not over. And there are plenty of people with COVID in the hospital, very sick and dying still.
A reminder that death toll is still mounting. Trevor Ault joins us from outside an emergency room in New York. And Trevor, this week the CDC has scheduled a meeting about reports of heart inflammation in a small number of young people who are vaccinated. What are they saying about this condition?
Well, Lindsay, the CDC says there's been more than 200 of these cases confirmed in people under 30 who got the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. Now, this condition is treatable. It's usually temporary, but this advisory panel will be analyzing whether these cases are in fact linked to the vaccines. Lindsay.
Trevor, thanks so much. And next to the dangerous heat wave out west, 43 million from California to Colorado now under heat alerts. Forecasters are concerned ahead of fire season. Small blazes already burning, this one in New Mexico, and the extreme drought in the west. The Lake Mead Reservoir is at record low levels. ABC senior meteorologist Rob Marciano joins us now. And Rob, this heat is set to break records.
Yeah, we're going to break some records, Lindsay, no doubt about that. And the problem with this one, it's going to be a long-duration heat wave that's going to last all week in the west. Excessive heat warnings are already up across six states there. Tomorrow's daytime highs will be 111 in Phoenix, in Vegas, 112 in Palm Springs, 116 in Phoenix. But look at Tuesday, 106 in Salt Lake. That'll probably be a record. 106 in Billings. That would be the earliest we've been this warm. 107 in Grand Junction. That would be an all-time record for that city. And we're looking for it to peak not until Thursday. These temperatures measured in the shade, dangerous stuff. Lindsay?
Dangerous indeed, Rob. Thank you. It could be the end of an era in Israel. The country's longest-serving prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has been ousted. The new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, leads a fragile coalition, and tonight Netanyahu is vowing a comeback. Here's ABC's Julia McFarlane.
Tonight, chaos in the Knesset as Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, ousted from power after 12 years and not going gracefully. Ahead of today's decisive vote, the man vying to take his place, ultra-right nationalist Naftali Bennett, speaking of the need for new leadership to, quote, stop the madness. Netanyahu's allies trying to drown him out, many ejected from the chamber, calling Bennett, a former Netanyahu protege, a traitor. Outraged that Bennett's governing coalition will formally include, for the first time in Israel's history, members of an independent Arab party. Netanyahu speaking for the last time as prime minister, listing his achievements and arguing that his replacement is too weak to keep Israel safe, even regarding its ally the US and the Biden administration, declaring the prime minister of Israel needs to be able to say no to the president of the United States on issues that threaten our existence.
Orit Malka-Struk, neged.
When it came, the vote could not have been closer, 60 to 59. But never one to go down without a fight, he made a vow. It's a vow new Prime Minister Bennett will likely take seriously. He has a majority of just one seat, and Netanyahu has won power from the opposition twice before. Well, tonight, President Biden congratulated Bennett in a phone call to the new Prime Minister. Lindsay?
Julia, thank you. We are now learning more about the Trump Justice Department and a newly revealed secret gathering of information. Back in February of 2018, the DOJ sought data from Apple accounts connected to White House counsel Don McGahn and his wife. This comes on the heels of recent allegations that the DOJ secretly obtained data from accounts belonging to two congressional Democrats. Here's ABC's White House correspondent, Mary Alice Parks.
Tonight, ABC News confirming that the Justice Department in 2018 issued subpoenas to Apple, including requesting records from then White House counsel Don McGahn and his wife. And Apple complied. It's not clear whether McGahn was the subject of an investigation or connected to someone who was. At the time, Special Counsel Robert Mueller was investigating links between the Trump campaign and Russia. And DOJ was looking into leaks of classified information, too. But still unknown what led investigators to request McGahn's records. McGahn was a link between the White House and the DOJ, and often reportedly the subject of President Trump's frustrations, especially after McGahn says he ignored Trump when Trump wanted Mueller fired. The latest news, first reported by the New York Times, coming just days after reports that Trump's DOJ also ordered Apple to turn over personal account data from Eric Swalwell and Adam Schiff, two Democratic members of Congress on the House Intelligence Committee and fierce critics of the former president. The Inspector General for the Department of Justice last week announcing it's investigating those requests. Today, Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying Trump's former attorneys general should be prepared to testify about possible abuse of power.
What the administration did, the Justice Department, the leadership of the former president, goes even beyond Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon had an enemies list. This is about undermining the rule of law.
Now, our sources say that Apple only notified McGahn and his wife about all of this last month when a court-imposed gag order expired. Neither Apple, McGahn, nor former President Trump has responded to our request for comment. Lindsay?
Many remaining tight-lipped on this. Mary Alice, thank you. Next to a rise in mass shootings, in just a six-hour period this weekend in four U.S. cities, Austin, Cleveland, Savannah, and Chicago, a total of five dead, 39 wounded. Chicago has been especially bloody, at least 32 people shot, three killed since Friday. These scenes from Saturday, 10 people shot, one died when gunmen approached a group standing on a South Side street corner. Nationwide, there have been more than 260 mass shootings this year. There is a gripping murder mystery unfolding in South Carolina. Two members of a prominent and powerful legal family found dead on a sprawling estate. Authorities are desperately searching for leads. Here's ABC's Kenneth Moten.
Tonight, investigators working to unravel a mysterious double homicide involving one of South Carolina's most prominent legal families. 22-year-old Paul Murdaugh and his 52-year-old mother Maggie found shot to death last week outside the family's hunting lodge on their sprawling estate in rural Colleton County. The victims, part of a legal and political dynasty, three generations of Murdaugh men serving as top prosecutors in the region. Paul's father and Maggie's husband, Alex Murdaugh, also an attorney at the family's powerhouse legal firm and part-time prosecutor. Paul Murdaugh was awaiting trial, accused of being under the influence in 2019 and crashing a boat, killing 19-year-old passenger Mallory Beach. The Beach family extending deepest and warmest sympathies to the Murdaugh family. State investigators saying little about the murders, but insist there's no danger to the public.
But still, Lindsay, no suspects in this case, and authorities haven't released autopsy results. Paul Murdaugh and his mother, Maggie, were laid to rest Friday. Lindsay.
Kenneth, thank you. Growing pressure from Missouri legislators calling on the governor, Mike Parson, to pardon a man who the prosecutor's office says was wrongfully convicted of murder back in 1978. I traveled to a Missouri prison where I sat down with Kevin Strickland. He has spent the past 43 years of his life behind bars, convicted of triple murder. Back in 2009, the prosecution's star witness recanted her testimony, and those who confessed to the crime told police Strickland was not involved. How does it feel to know that the two people who admit that they were responsible for the crime, Bell and Adkins, they've already served their time, served about 10 years each. They did it. They said they did it. You say you didn't do it, and here you sit.
Unbelievable. I mean, how could somebody admit to doing it, come in and go out, and I denied it from the start, and I'm still here?
Strickland says he wakes up hopeful each day that it could be the day of his release. And there's still much more ahead on World News Tonight this Sunday. How one woman realized she was having a stroke during a Zoom call and what she wants others to know.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Next tonight, to the life-changing Zoom call, a woman who saw herself on camera and realized she was having a stroke. Here's ABC's Zareen Shah.
It's a Zoom meeting that Nebraska mom Ann Tillery won't soon forget.
My speech started to slur, and I could see on my screen that my face was drooping.
Ann was on a work call.
I thought, this is odd, and it was just right away.
She was having a stroke. She could see it happening. This Zoom screenshot capturing the moment.
That was me actively having a stroke, and then I called 911.
Ann rushed to the hospital. Doctors say it was her quick action and recognition of sudden symptoms, including loss of muscle control and slurred speech, that saved her life.
Time is tissue, and that means your brain tissue. And the sooner you get to us, the sooner we can fix it.
At first, Ann's entire left side was paralyzed, but within 24 hours, she was up and walking. And tonight, she has a message.
I'm doing this so that people can really take a moment and learn how to spot a stroke, because so often when we get into a Zoom meeting, we're worried about the technology.
And Lindsay, doctors warn that stroke symptoms can come on suddenly. Like Ann did, you must act quickly. Lindsay?
As a doctor said, time is tissue, Zareen. Thank you. To the index now, a father and son are dead and another person is missing after they were caught in strong currents. Air and sea crews are searching for 27-year-old Christoph Murray near Tampa, Florida, after he jumped into the water to try to save a man and a 3-year-old who were swept away by rough water but did not survive. An update on Danish soccer star Christian Eriksen. The 29-year-old collapsed on the field during a Euro 2020 match against Finland. The team doctor said today that Eriksen suffered cardiac arrest and was, quote, gone before resuscitation. He remains in stable condition. A 4-year-old is now recovering after he was pulled from an Ohio pond. Police dash cam captured the moment two Painesville officers rushed into the water and found the child unresponsive and under debris. One officer then pulled him out of the water and performed CPR. The child is now in stable condition. Finally tonight, the 12-year-old America Strong proving baseball is not just for boys.
Whoever coined the taunt, "You throw like a girl," never saw 12-year-old Valentina Smith unleash from the pitcher's mound.
It's kind of like, oh, she's just a girl. This is going to be easy, because sometimes when I go up to pitch, I start off with a changeup, and some of them laugh and smile. And then I throw a fastball, and they're like, they just start actually getting serious. Like, the smiles just start to fade away.
Valentina isn't just one of the starting pitchers for the Parkland All-Stars Little League team in Florida. She's also a strong hitter. 2 weeks ago, she hit her first ball over the fence.
I didn't know it was gone till I started getting halfway from first base, because then I heard my whole dugout cheering and I saw it land, and I just started crying so hard because it was my first time hitting it over the fence.
Valentina's been playing some form of baseball since she was four, and today she works just as hard off the field.
I've always wanted to, you know, show girls that they can do it just as good or maybe even better of what boys can do.
She loves baseball so much, she plays on three teams.
That's one of my favorite parts, always traveling, hotels, pools, food.
Her advice to other baseball-loving girls?
There are going to be a lot of obstacles, and there are going to be a lot of people that say, you can't do it because you're a girl. I would say to not listen to them, to always shoot for the stars, always push through, don't quit.
Keep pushing through. The Parkland All-Stars are just three wins away from the Little League World Series. We will be rooting for you. Thanks so much for watching. David Muir, right back here tomorrow night. I'm Lindsay Davis in New York. Good night.